Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Talking Comics Podcast. It's September 18th, 2019, otherwise known as New Comic Book Day, and you're listening to episode number 408. I am your host, Steve Say, and joining me this week are Mr. Bob Ryer.
Happy birthday, Sarah, and you too, Hugh.
And Sarah Miles.
Let's get ready to rumble! No!
Happy birthday, as Bob said, to our own Sarah. How you feeling?
Old.
Stop.
No, I feel really good, actually. I have managed to misstate my age three times today, so it's all good.
Can I tell you that there are days when I forget how old I am? I had to ask Bronwyn the last time.
See, you get to my age, you never forget. Yeah. You're doing math?
Got the calculator out earlier. I was like, am I 39? I'm not.
No.
I asked her one day, I was like, am I going to be 39 next year or 38? She just looked at me. She's like, really? Like, yeah. It turns out that I'm 38 years old and will be 39 in January. So there you go. Almost to 40. My God. I'm glad that you're having a nice day.
I am having a nice day. I've been to the gym for like 2.5 hours, and then I've read comic books. Like the best day.
And now you're going to talk about comic books for like the next hour and a half to 2 hours with us.
Even better.
All right. Thank you very much for spending a portion of your birthday with us. I feel loved and special, as I'm sure all of our listeners do as well. And also, super happy birthday to Mr. Hugh Parry, one of our oldest friends. Hope you're doing really good, man. All right, let's see. If you've not visited talkingcomicbooks.com lately or haven't seen the tweets, Bob has reprinted his The Secret Origin of a Comic Book Fan on the site. It is a heartwarming and uplifting read, and I suggest that you all go and check it out. Absolutely.
Thank
you, Steve. Yeah. It's lovely, and everyone should read it.
Yeah. It's good. It'll leave you feeling warm and fuzzy, I think.
Oh, let's hope.
All right,
I can see the brickbats coming now.
No, it's fine. Let's see here. What do we got? We've got lightning rounds for you. We got a little bit of open discussion, and we also have some listener questions for this week. I have finally, at long last, there was a mix-up with the password for our email. And I did not have access to it for quite some time, but now I do. And I came across a bunch of emails, some good, some not so good, and pulled a question or two. And so we're going to read some of those as well.
Cool.
Thank you to everybody for sending them in. And just to put the word out, I am going to be doing my best to check that account before each podcast. So if you're thinking about sending us an email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com, you can absolutely feel free to do that. We would love to hear from you. Regardless of the nature of your email, some people get real creative.
There was an old radio comedy duo named Bob and Ray. Actually, Bob Elliott is Chris Elliott's father. You know, Chris Elliott from the Letterman show. And
oh, yeah, Cabin Boy.
Yeah, right. But at the end of their show, they were very dry and arch comedians. And one of their bits was, as they'd get to the end of a show, oh, and by the way, keep those cards and letters. Not to keep the cards and letters coming. Keep those cards and letters.
Bob, have you seen Scary Movie 2?
I don't think so.
Oh my God, Chris Elliott in that movie. He is... I like that movie. I don't care. I like that movie a lot. But Chris Elliott has this scene where he is kind of the... oh God, who is the character from Rocky Horror Picture Show with the long white hair? Riff Raff?
Riff Raff.
Yeah.
Okay. He is like a spoof on Riff Raff, hosting this dinner party for all the guests that have come into this haunted house. And oh my God, if you can find it on YouTube, go and look it up. Mm-hmm. It's priceless. So is the scene where Anna Faris fights the cat after he finds out that she pooped in his litter box. It's amazing.
There's we're so off on tangents now. There was a whole bit about Cabin Boy when Letterman hosted the Oscars that some people found disastrous, but I thought was hysterically funny, because basically speaking, he went out and did his show on the Oscars, which included stupid pet tricks and having little Tommy Hanks come up from the audience. I think that he was nominated for Philadelphia on top of everything else, and he's got him participating in stupid pet tricks. But he ran a clip of Letterman's own small scene in Cabin Boy, where he's standing on a dock and he's saying to, I guess it's Chris Harris, somebody, hey, anybody want to buy a monkey? And he said, you know, I wasn't the first choice for that. And he had some of the biggest people in Hollywood read that line holding a stuffed monkey, including Paul Newman and a half a dozen other people, including Madonna being rather profound. Hey, anyone want to buy a blankety blank monkey?
Oh, God.
It's out there somewhere.
Don't make me tell my Madonna story. I have two.
Some other day on our Madonna-centric episode, we'll
sure,
break it out.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that's coming up. All right. Why don't we get into some lightning round business? Let's see. Let's have Bob go first, which is the usual. I'm going to put 5 minutes on the clock for you, and go.
Due to some Year of the Villain shenanigans, the cheetah has powered up to the point where she was able to kill Aphrodite, the goddess of love, in a recent issue. In Wonder Woman number 78 by G. Willow Wilson and Scott Derenick, we're shown that how a world, in particular Diana, can cope with a loveless culture. As ever, some very important truths about the character of Wonder Woman are investigated, and sadly, as almost always, they're undercut by rather pedestrian artwork. Ms. Wilson's run might have been something epic with the right partner. As it is, it's been good, but not what it should have been. And it's sadly coming to an end, though. Steve Orlando is a great choice to follow. We'll see what happens with that. Speaking of powered up, in Invisible Woman number 3 by Mark Waid and Mattea De Iulis and Joe Caramagna, Susan Storm Richard shows off a new ability that's suggested to her by her daughter Valeria, one that would certainly help a secret agent. Not spoiling this, Steve hasn't read it yet. This has been a very enjoyable bit of spy stuff with all the requisite twists, plus a few new surprises. One that will make, well, a fantastic trade read. Sorry. No. Invaders number 9 by Chip Zdarsky, Carlos Magno, and Butch Geist. Alex Guimaraes as well. Just again does a masterful job of all sorts of weaving. I mean, the threads of deep history into this new story that does still read like classic Marvel. Some surprises here too, so I can't say too much, but this issue is certainly sending up a grand endgame for that one. Oop, gotta skip that one. That's
is that ending
out.
Soon?
Well, I think we're into the end of this story arc.
Okay.
We're getting to that point, and we'll see where we go from there. I hope it continues, because it's been fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
To close out, and it's getting harder to write these as described on the cover, it's the anti-penultimate issue of The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl by Ryan North, Derek Charm, Rico Renzi, and Travis Lanham. Evil genius Melissa Moorbeck is out to destroy Doreen Green, and since she revealed her secret identity to the world and gathered together Squirrel Girl's rogues gallery to take her out, this may be a fight that proves that no one is unbeatable. Mm. With an epic Squirrel Girl moment, diabolical monologuing, a very special guest appearance by Iron Man, and so many baddies that it takes a full-page spread of Doreen's Deadpool's Guide to Supervillains cards to catalog them all. The amazing creative team is going all in on this final arc, bringing to bear all the aspects that have made the unbeatable Squirrel Girl truly unique. Speaking of bears, I am hoping for a guest appearance for the last time by Ms. Morbeck's hench creatures, Chef Bear and Alfredo the Chicken.
Chef Bear, yes.
Haven't seen him yet. That's it for me.
I love Chef Bear. Let's see. Yeah, I didn't read any of your books this past week. I'm so sorry. I'm really loving the Invisible Woman series overall. It's very, very, very cool. And I love the Ulysses art.
Yeah. You're going to love this issue. The new little bit that Sue can do thanks to Valeria is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that Steve Orlando is doing such a knockout job on Wonder Woman. Sad to hear that the next one is his last for
now.
No,
no. G. Willow Wilson is on the book still.
Oh, really? So
yes.
What is it?
She's finishing up. Steve Orlando will be taking over when Ms. Wilson leaves.
Oh, well, that's good news then.
Yes, hopefully they'll give him some better artists to work with.
No.
It's not terrible. There's one awful shot of the cheetah. Mm-hmm. That it my eyes dropped, as well as her accoutrements.
Oh, Invaders.
It's just you're undercutting a wonderful story with artwork that is, it isn't DC's complete house style of that we see in all of our other books, which is fine for a lot of other books. This requires something a little more nuanced, then we're just not getting it for the most part. As to Invaders. The art on that's been sensational since day one, and Zdarsky's story even better.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that that's been one of the biggest surprises of the year, and I think I'm one issue out. I need to read number 9, but I've been loving it as well so far. Sarah, did you have anything to add?
I haven't read any of those books. I am so far behind on Wonder Woman. I don't even know where to go back to at this point. I think I might actually wait until G. Willow Wilson has finished and then just read her entire run in one go, just to get myself caught up, because it's one of those books that just sort of gets put to one side and I think I'll get to it, and then I just don't get to it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, story's been good. Her grasp of the character, stellar, as you'd imagine.
Mm.
The bits of it I read,
I really enjoyed. But it's just been a hot minute since I've actually picked that book up and read it in earnest.
Mm-hmm. I find that with certain things, like the reason that I don't get to certain books throughout the week is because I want to do rereads, or at least start the arc over again to kind of like catch the wave, so to speak, and go into that new issue. And I just don't have the time, especially with the schedule being what it is now, that we only have a few days to catch up. And sometimes you just can't keep up. And if I shotgun too many comics, I have a habit of forgetting what I've read. So don't want to do that, because then why are you buying them all the time? Let's see here. If nobody has anything else to add, I think, Sarah, we can move into your lightning round. 5 minutes on the clock. Go.
Okay, I'm going to open with Maneaters number 11 from Chelsea Kane, Leah Mitinerke, Elise McCall, Rochelle Rosenberg, and Joe Caramagna. Now, full disclosure, I like the way that Chelsea Kane writes. I think she's smart and funny, and she can put out some very, very good books. However, sometimes I also think she's as dumb as mud. Maneaters suffered because she did and said some very stupid and somewhat offensive things on social media that alienated a lot of readers. It has been an incredibly long time since the last issue of Maneaters came out, largely, I think, because of some of the dumb and stupid things that she said online. So I was hoping to find some sort of apology or redemption in the pages of issue 11. But what I actually got was very confusing. I had to read the book 2 or 3 times to make any sense of what was essentially a jumbled mess that looked like it was trying to tie everything together. But it left me very confused and very frustrated. As always, the fake adverts and the magazine style parts were present in the book. And honestly, for me, they were the absolute highlight of this issue. They've been stellar throughout the entire run. And I just absolutely loved what they did with them this time. But there was actually one page which said, you know, recap by Kevin or something. And it made literally no sense. And I just went, are you trolling us? Are you trying to be more confusing than you actually are? It didn't work for me, unfortunately. And sticking with the theme of disappointment, I have an apology to make. My next book is from Action Lab, and it is the one-shot Chainsaw Reindeer from Brandon Rhinus, Carlos Trigo, Premslev Dedalus, and Chris Johnson. I brought this book to the table last week because I thought it was going to be another fun comedy romp in the reign of Grizzly Shark or Shirtless Bearfighter. And I wholeheartedly want to apologize to anyone who read the book because I mentioned it. Chainsaw Reindeer was offensive. It was racist. It was poorly written. And the art was bad. I wouldn't
Triple
normally
crown.
Yeah, I wouldn't normally talk about a book in such negative terms, but honestly, I found this book disgusting. And the fact that the writer penned a letter in the back of the book saying, I think this comic will piss off a lot of people, and I have to admit that amuses me, means that I'm not going to hold back. There's one panel in the book that actually prompted the staff at my local comic shop and I to have a discussion over whether the thing being cut off of the woman in the panel is a breast or a pregnant belly. And if that isn't enough to make you not want to read a book, then I can't help you. Because what these creators have produced is essentially, to me at least, everything that is wrong with comics. I want books that are welcoming to new readers. I want books that put something good into the world or make the world a better place. And this deliberately does neither of those things. Mm. So let's move on to bigger and better and brighter yeah. things. And as breaths of fresh air go, they do not get much better than Sabrina the Teenage Witch number 5 from Kelly Thompson, Veronica Fish, Andy Fish and Jack Morelli. Published by Archie Comics, this is a light, bright, fun read with frankly gorgeous art from the team. This issue cleverly wraps up the storyline from this first arc in a slightly sort of Scooby-Doo kind of a way, which I very much enjoyed. There's plenty of action and an awesome appearance from Salem in a form that I absolutely adore. This series has got a lot more in common with the 90s TV show than with the current Netflix offering. And it's a great dose of nostalgia with some very modern twists. I'm also really pleased about the fact that they're going to get a second arc because they finish this one off with a cliffhanger and I want to know what happens next. I love all the characters. I love the new characters that they've introduced. I really like what they've done with the aunts in this book. Kelly Thompson is at the top of her game at the moment. She, touch wood, can do no wrong for me. And Sabrina the Teenage Witch number 5 is just one of those books that makes me want to just go up to people on the street and go, have you read this? Have you? It's really good. You should read this. Speaking of books that I thought were really, really good, I also read Collapser number 3 from Mikey Way, Sean Simon, Elissa Kyriazis, Chris Peter and Simon Boland. I know I've talked about Collapser before. I know I have an unfortunate tendency to talk about the same books repeatedly, but I wanted to bring this book back to the table because the artwork in this issue is utterly stunning. Mm. The range of types of art, from Golden Age style black and white panels through pastel shaded pages to brightly coloured monsters sundering the fabric of reality. Oh. This book is beautiful. The plot is frankly bonkers, to be honest with you, but in a good readable way, not in a what the hell is happening, I'm confused way. There's a good amount of story in this issue and things move on quickly. And there's absolutely no filler in this book whatsoever. Sometimes third issues can suffer from that sort of, we gave you loads of exposition, we gave you loads of action, we're not really sure what we're doing now kind of thing. There's none of that with Collapser. And it is just beautiful. I can't rave about the art enough in this book. The range that they cover is absolutely brilliant. Two meh books and two absolutely corking books for me this week.
There's another one of them. Yeah. Corking. I love it.
I have deliberately used bonkers and corking just for Joey. I know he's off on his secret mission and we can't talk about it this week, but I know you're listening, Joey.
Yeah, bonkers. I learned my mistake from last time after I blew up his spot by not interpreting his text the right way.
Secret mission.
Those poor dolphins. Whatever will they do? So, Chainsaw Reindeer, eh?
I am so sorry.
It's fine. Yeah. It was in the review folder. I didn't spend any money on it. So here's my journey with Chainsaw Reindeer. I'm like, oh man, like Sarah talked about, oh, wait a minute. Joey said it's in the review folder. Let's go check it out. And so I think it was that night. It was Tuesday night that I went to go and read it. And it's loading up, and it takes a little bit of time when it's in the Google thing. And so the cover pops up, and I just went, oh no. Because Action Lab, they print a lot of nice books. They have a number of great titles in their lineup. But every now and again, they also print something that I just is not my cup of tea. So I look at this cover, and I'm like, oh no. Like, this is not a grizzly shark. This is not a shirtless bear fighter. I open it up. I was simultaneously flabbergasted by what I was reading and simultaneously feeling so horrible for Sarah, who like came to the podcast and was like, come on, boys, Chainsaw Reindeer. And everybody's like, woo! And we're all like ready for like, you know, Grizzly Shark, The Revenge or whatever. And like she was saying, it devolves into this unfunny, offensive mess. Really, it's racist. It's really bad. And I do know that panel that you're talking about, Sarah. I honestly didn't really give it any thought just because I was trying to race to the end so quickly. But now that I think about it, I woof. So yeah, it not that it's trying to, but it doesn't hold a candle and doesn't have the same cadence and whimsy of those other ridiculous books that we've mentioned, and it is not fit to join the pantheon of
Oh Lord, no. Shark and Shirtless Bear Fighter. It is offensive for the sake of being offensive. It's got domestic violence as a plot point. It's got rape as a plot point. It's got bestiality as a plot point. And the only reason I brought that specific panel up is that the owner of my comic shop was looking forward to it as much as I was based on the blurb. Mm-hmm. And I walked into the shop on Wednesday and he was like, have you read this book yet? And I was like, no, is it any good? And he went, we're going to play pick the panel that I found the most offensive. And I was like, okay. And I'm flicking through the book and he was like, it's not the one of the queen getting cut in half. And I was like, is it one of the ones that's massively racist or one of the ones that's slightly racist? And he's like, no, it's one of the misogynistic ones. I was like, ooh.
Yeah, there are definitely some parallels to slavery going on in this as well.
I was back in the shop again today talking to one of the other guys that works there, and he was like, it's like they set out to just be as horrible to as many people as possible. And this is a guy who Matt, who creates comics. He was the guy behind the cadavers that I brought to the table with the somehow sex noises.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he knows about making comics and he knows what kind of hoops you have to jump through and the editorial process. And the fact that this book was put out by Action Lab, who do print a number of books for younger audiences and for children. He did actually say to me, you have two choices in life. You can make the world a better place or you can make the world a worse place. And he said, I will use my books as much as I can to do the former, because if you're going to make the world a worse place, what's the point? And I was just like, that is an incredibly good way of putting how I feel about this book. So I'm sorry, anybody who read it or spent money on it or wasted their eye time and precious reading time just looking at it, because, and also to anyone who, you know, found it amusing and thought it was great, I'm sorry if I'm offending you now by saying how awful I think this book is. But yeah, do good things, people. Make good art.
As long as we're doing those mea culpas, I'll jump in on your man eaters. As someone who championed this book for a long time and still enjoyed a lot of it, the train wreck that it became with Ms. Kane's comments that she didn't really attempt to walk back, but just all made them worse. And then
she doubles down. She doubles down when she gets called out on anything. It's happened more than once.
And then we get to this issue where I think there is one more to come that is another magazine issue where that recap may help. But this was completely confusing and unappealing conclusion to what could have been a good story, because we have there's one page where this is weird to say it this way. There's a giant girl-shaped Zeppelin that apparently crashes into the Hollywood sign that is then fine on another page. Go ahead, please.
Were the flowers in the background like showing that it was a weird fantasy thing? Was that all in her head? I really didn't get that. I'm so glad it wasn't just me.
No, and we get to the end where is it a delusion? Were panthers a delusion or a metaphor? And it doesn't come down on either side of it, really. And we're spoiling this, but I don't want people spending money they shouldn't. You should all make up your own mind, however. But I'm hoping for something out of this last issue, since I already have it pre-ordered, that it makes this a little more palatable. But this was not what I invested time in reading and rereading, and I was left very underwhelmed.
There you have
it. But Sabrina the Teenage Witch and Collapse are both really good, though. Positives. Woo! Yes.
Woo! And Sabrina, when's that? There's going to be a trade coming soon, right?
There is going to be a trade coming soon. There is also a Sabrina magazine coming out next week. It's like £9, so it'll probably be like $11 or something. There's a new thing coming out. I think it's called like the Super Sabrina magazine, and it's going to have all kinds of bits and pieces from the Netflix show, the original 90s show, the comics, I think.
Nice. And I just checked, the trade is due December 10th.
Just in time for Christmas.
Right. It should be in, I guess, the new previews, which will be in stores in the next week or so. So, folks, pre-order that. We always tell you pre-order. I'll be pre-ordering that one. Thank you, Sarah.
It's so good. And so pretty.
All right.
I almost burst into song then, and I just managed to stop myself.
I feel pretty.
Oh, so pretty. Now
there
you've done
go.
It.
See? All right. I'm going to set myself up for a lightning round. Here's the deal. We have some short weeks on this podcast because of our new recording schedule. As such, I read a bunch of stuff this week. Some stuff I've talked to death on this show, so I'm choosing not to do that. But I whiffed on a couple of things as well. So I have lots of stuff for our listener questions later, and only one book for you this week, but it's a good one. All right, here we go. 5 minutes on the clock. King Thor number one, written by Jason Aaron, art by Isad Ribic. Colors by Ive Sforcina, and letters by VC's Joe Sabino. Taking place eons after the current events of Jason Aaron's Thor, as well as the War of the Realms, King Thor number one begins with Thor's nieces, the Girls of Thunder, Frigg, Elisiv, and Atli. After reaching the ruins of Omnipotent City, the ladies go in search of an ancient tome called the Nexus of the Gods. Within its decaying pages, they hope to learn of a way to defeat the All Black, a weapon born of the god Null and forged in the fire of a Celestial. You with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
After centuries of hiding out, the All Black has returned, taking Loki as its ultimate host. As the ladies search the halls of all-knowing for answers, King Thor battles Loki among the cosmos, setting fire to the stars while ripping what's left of the known galaxy apart. Or asunder, rather. So begins the end of Thor. So begins the end of everything. This book, just like the entirety of Aaron's Thor, is epic beyond measure. Allow me to paint some pictures for you. This is directly from this issue. There's lots there. I'm not spoiling a whole lot. But at some point in their history, Thor chained Loki up and left him in a pit of Muspelheim fire vipers. Loki literally ate his way out, the vipers slithering inside his gut, and his insides burned as he cried tears of venom. Oh! At another point in this story, Thor throws Mjolnir past a star so it catches fire. He catches it. He dips it in a pool of napalm that's located on the planet's surface, then blows up a quarter of the planet as he smacks the hammer across Loki's chin. Like, a whole chunk of this planet just goes blows off into the stars. And I'm just, like, I'm pumped. Like, I have hellfire going through my veins as I'm reading this book. I know that it goes without saying, given the source material, but Aaron's Thor truly is Greek myth told via the Marvel method. I can feel Loki's anger. I can sense Thor's desperation. I felt lost among the stacks as Frigg, Elisiv, and Atli searched the great library of the gods. Aaron and company have spent the last 7 years building this mythology, so all of these characters, the weapons, the realms, I feel like I know them so well at this point, and because I feel that way, I'm affected by every poetic word at this point in my Thor career. Every thrust of the sword that strikes true, I'm like, holy shit! Every time, all the time. These comics have a way of making you feel like the end of the world could happen at any moment, yet something miraculous and unpredictable always happens to keep the story going. And I think that what they've done with the series is nothing short of incredible. It will go down in history, no doubt, as one of my favorite of all time. I love Thor. I love King Thor. I love Thorir the Murder Dog. I love Throg. You name it. If it's got Thor in it, I'm interested. That's it for me.
And it's still on my list of shame.
You'll read it eventually.
I will.
I love this issue too, Steve. This was a wonderful beginning to this mini, but it's also a great continuation of all that Aaron has done over all these years.
Mm-hmm.
It is epic. Ribic's art is just incredible. The colors too, because as you shift from one scene to another, the girls, I don't mean to be this person, they're Thor's granddaughters.
Oh, I said nieces?
Yeah.
Whoops. Sorry about that.
Whoops. That's okay. It is dark and light and then burning, as you say, with a planet of napalm and a whole slice of the planet come flying off. This is it's brilliant storytelling. It's long form, but still short and digestible at the same time. He has a great gift, Jason Aaron does, in creating this universe of his own within the Marvel Universe. And it's worked from day one, and it continues to work. It looks right through to the very end, which is going to be sad.
The amount of things that are ending this year is incredible. I think this is the most we've had in all the years that we've been doing the show, as far as like site-wide or podcast-wide series ending.
Yeah, we should have a whole poured out episode and have a whole list.
In memoriam,
right, like the Oscars.
The In Memoriam Award.
Episode, yes.
So, yeah, if you're continuing to read Thor, hope you're enjoying it. And if you have yet to check it out, eventually, go and just do the whole thing. Start with Thor, God of Thunder, with Gore, the God Butcher, and go from there, because it all ties together. It's 7 years worth of story, and the vast majority of it is just top shelf stuff, in my opinion.
Wait, top shelf as in top shelf, or top shelf as in good?
Top shelf as in good. Why? What's the other one?
Well, the top shelf is where they put the naughty books.
Oh,
as opposed to top shelf in a pub, where that's where the better liquor goes.
Is that? Okay.
I meant going to the pub and having a fine bourbon or
cognac or something. Yeah.
I assume top shelf means going to the newsagents and getting the naughty magazines. That's clearly saying more about my brain than anything.
There's like intermittent sexiness throughout the series, but it's always the aftermath. It's always like somebody walking away from the orgy. You know,
yeah, it's Thor. There's got to be some hot stuff going on there.
Right. But like other characters get involved too. They're not shy.
So if anyone else is planning on like reading the entirety of it and has never read it before, let me know. And maybe we can do some kind of read along thing so that I won't feel quite as bad as having it on my list of shame as I do at the moment. And I really will read Batman too at some point.
Imagine if somebody suggested Jason Aaron's Thor for the ladies of Valhalla.
don't even think about it.
Ah.
No, but luckily, you can't do that because it has to be a female identifying lead character or creator. And Jason Aaron and Thor are lads.
Not when it's Jane.
Yeah.
Oh.
Ah, loophole.
Shh.
All right.
I've got so much reading to do already. Please, nobody suggest that.
No, don't worry. I'll save
it. Not just yet. Save it for next year. Okay. We're booked up for this year because somebody's making us read Giant Days again.
I didn't make you do anything. Bob, would you care to lead us in a discussion about Captain Marvel number 10?
Sure. It is Captain Marvel number 10 by Kelly Thompson, Carmen Carnero, Tamra Bonvillain, and Clayton Cowles. It's part 3 of the Falling Star arc. Since returning from the siege of Roosevelt Island, Carol Danvers has been assailed from all quarters. Her powers are waning, her half-breed lineage has been revealed, Krakens are attacking, and the public is turning against her in favor of a new heroine named Star. Quite a few of these events can be laid at the feet of Carol's old foe Minerva, although she does seem to have taken an anti-heel turn for now. All these and more come to a head in this issue, which continues the spectacular beginning to the Thompson-Carnero run. Thoughts, anyone?
Sarah, would you like to go first?
Yes, I have been absolutely loving this book. I don't read a huge amount of Marvel, but when I do, I read absolutely top-notch Marvel because that's what this is. I want to say about the artwork, the artwork has been absolutely gorgeous. I love what they are doing with Carol. I love the way that she looks. They managed to make her look powerful but also vulnerable at the right times. The facial expressions used in this book are so good. I mean there's a lot of emotion in this book, and there's some moments where Carol and Tony are talking and the faces are just absolutely brilliant. Story-wise, anything that involves giant krakens attacking New York City has got to be good. Sorry, New York, like, you always get all the bad stuff. But also there's a bit in Times Square which is just so brilliantly written, and Carol is just being so Carol Danvers. She's being ballsy and brash and putting herself in harm's way to make the world a better place, and it's absolutely brilliant. And the way that they use the billboards in Times Square and the panel layout on one particular page, I absolutely love it. I think this entire series has been really, really good. And I know that we've talked a lot about when Kelly Sue was writing Captain Marvel, and obviously I absolutely adore that and I will always adore that, and it will go down in history as one of my favorite comic series ever. But what Kelly Thompson is doing here with Captain Marvel, I think, is has the potential to be equally as brilliant.
Agree.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I was gonna say that Kelly Thompson's run, I just read I think 8 through 10 last night, and this is definitely my favorite of the Captain Marvel stuff since Kelly Sue's run. This story in particular has been incredible. And like you were saying, Sarah, that moment where she's in Times Square, the page where we actually see Star and her like exchanging words, not the first page with the going down, like the panels going down the tower, but the next one, like you mentioned the faces, like the scowls and the smirks and the looking down at the nose, and just, I love the artwork in this book. And this is a very emotional story. It's really interesting how Kelly Thompson has used kind of like the what's going on currently with people being detained and people being ousted from the country and denied entry and stuff like that. And now that it's out into the world that Captain Marvel is Kree, that is tying into this a lot. And there's a lot of emotion behind that. There's a lot of messaging behind that. And I just find it to be a very, very powerful story. And I especially love the stuff with Minerva that's going on in this. And the elaboracy of her plot and the way that she executes it, I just think is brilliant.
Mm.
Yeah, lots of surprises. What isn't surprising is how good Kelly Thompson's been on this book. She's molding together Kelly Sue DeConnick's run, Margaret Stoll's life of Captain Marvel, her own sensibilities to it all, into something really special. I agree with both of you. This is going to be one of those runs that we talk about for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, she's been on fire for a while, but I think that this ranks among some of her best, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Big cliffhanger in this one, too.
Okay, let's see. I'm going to reread our list of titles here, and then we're going to get to some listener questions and stuff. There wasn't a whole lot of news this past week, at least not that I saw. So, let's see here. Bob had Wonder Woman number 78, Invisible Woman number 3, Invaders number 9, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 48. Sarah had Maneaters number 11, Chainsaw Reindeer one shot, Sabrina the Teenage Witch number 5, Collapser number 3. And I talked about King Thor number 1, and we all talked about Captain Marvel number 10. So, okay, so I mentioned earlier in the show that we were going through some of the emails. And I pulled a few of them. Some of them were a little bit old, but I don't want to ignore them because they had some good questions. So this one comes from Chris. He asked, there's a couple of that he asked. How far along is Steve with his dreamy Sandman reading adventure? I hate to disappoint you, Chris. Not very far. Not far at all. I am still chugging my way through the first trade. I'm terrible. But anyway, so Chris says, what else? What things do you always carry with you? Or what things would be in your car just in case? So basically, when you leave the house, like, what do you make sure to always have on you? What do you need to survive when you go out the front door? Sarah.
Okay. So I'm going to preface this with an apology to Faz, who is my sports massage guy, who every time I go and see him tells me off because of my ridiculously huge handbag and how heavy it is. So when I leave the house, I carry obvious things like my mobile phone, my house and car keys, and my purse, which has got all my cards and stuff in it. However, I also carry at least one fiction book and or comic book. I carry at least one of my notebooks, whether it's Talking Comics or Ladies of Valhalla. I carry a pencil case full of pens. I normally have some kind of like hand cream or moisturizer in my bag. I'm actually looking in my bag at the moment. I've got a phone charger cable. I've got my diary, which is like massive and has my entire life in it and like bits of paper sticking out of it and stuff. Phone charger, another phone charger. There's a lot of phone chargers in this handbag.
How many phones do you have?
One.
Well, okay.
Just many chargers. I'm not saying what that is. I've got a lipstick in here. I carry a lot of stuff. There's always a caffeine drink in my bag. This will come as no surprise to anyone ever. So essentially, I carry everything.
What is your caffeine poison of choice?
At the moment, it is a White Monster Ultra. It's generally something called Colossus Energy, which costs 55 pence and comes from Lidl. I normally carry Diet Coke with me as well, just in case, because, you know, it's Diet Coke. Also, I carry a bottle of water with me, and depending on where I'm going, it depends on the size of the water. So, like, if I'm just going for a walk, it's like a 1 liter bottle. But when I go to work, I have a 2 liter bottle of water. And then I have other stuff for my car. So like in the boot of my car is my emergency pack, which has a bottle of water, a torch, a blanket, a first aid kit, like sensible stuff in case I get stranded on my drive to the gym, which is literally the only place I ever take my car. Yeah.
Where's that?
Torch is a flashlight, right?
A torch is a flashlight, yes. Okay. Not the burning thing that they have in Shrek. I have got a mini toolkit in there just in case, but it doesn't have a pitchfork in it. It's just like, you know, hammers, screwdrivers, car jack, that kind of thing.
How much Monster can you drink in like a single go? Do you portion it out? Do you like take hits or do you just guzzle it?
I will pretty much do a can in about three swallows.
What?
Oh, okay. Yeesh. So I don't know how big your cans are. Because I've seen cans of drink 500 milliliters.
Yeah, they're like if the equivalent of Arizona teas in the can out in the States.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know what those look like.
No, those are bigger. I'm pretty sure those are bigger because you can get those in the university shop. And when I saw them, I was like, oh my God, it's like an 800 milliliter caffeine drink. I need it.
Because you could like charge a car battery with some of those monsters.
I'm a big lass. I need a lot of caffeine. Bearing in mind, though, that I drink coffee out of what is essentially a pint mug. So when I go to the gym in the morning, I have something called a pre-workout stim, which essentially is like a massive caffeine hit. Then I follow that up when I get back from the gym with a cup of coffee. Then I get to work. And when I'm at work, I'll drink three or four cups of coffee and one of these caffeine drinks. So basically, I don't exist unless I have a ridiculously high amount of caffeine in my body.
Sarah's going to be the first person in line once Starbucks invents their new drink, Starbucks IV.
Yes, please. That would be amazing. Thank you. I would like to point out that I'm not the worst, because when Jess and Dan drove me back from your place, Steve, down to New York, we went into a Starbucks and they had the Nitro, the slow pour one that looks like Guinness.
Yeah.
And Jess ordered one, and whatever size it was she tried to order, the guy was like, we're legally not allowed to sell you that much caffeine in one drink. And we were like, can we buy two smaller ones and just pour them into one cup? And the guy was like, do you want to die? No, we've got like a 9-hour car journey. So he sold us two smaller drinks and we just poured them into one cup. It was fine. Don't know what anyone's complaining about.
He got fired later that day. Yeah.
He was very apologetic about not being able to sell us the drink, though, so...
Oh boy, Bob, how about you?
It's a multi-part question in a way. If I go to work, I have to make sure that I bring a whole bag of CDs that I can throw into my computer while I'm working during the day, and so program my own music. So that has to happen. Otherwise, it's just boring and whatever's on YouTube or whatever. But that's just separate for that. Leaving the house beyond the sort of things that Sarah described, you have little money in your pocket, and you make sure you have your keys. Left the house without them once in a while. I had to crawl back through a window to get my own house. I always make sure I have business cards for Talking Comics in case you never know. There are people who want to hear about us, or they do and then want to know where to go next. I have that. Also, my wallet, I have... Oh, why not go for this? It's a Christmas picture of my goddaughter Casey when she was just a few months old, with a lovely Santa who looked like he walked right out of the North Pole, real beard and the whole thing. So I always have to have that in the car. Yeah, have to have the emergency kit. Have to have that. Tons of stuff. Here, though, in Suffolk County, they now charge you 5 cents at the store if you want a bag.
Mm-hmm.
So my trunk, not only does it have emergency kits, it has so many plastic bags in it, you'd be stunned. Large grocery-sized ones and smaller ones, and I have a number of official sort of comic book bags, mm-hmm. including one from Joey's Eastside comic store, where he gave me something, some book that he sent over, and I still use that bag all the time. It gets a lot of play. I even have Coliseum Books bags from a store that was out of business in New York City, at least 10 years ago. So you got to have bags around. Otherwise, you're paying a nickel, and you get the side eye from the clerks.
Replacing the plastics with the reusable bags?
Well, I have a number of those, but they are still here on the island. Most of them are plastic, or they're plastic coated fabric of one kind or other. You buy them for a dollar, and they have handles, and always do it. Though every week I make sure, as today when I was at the supermarket just before we started doing this, bought stuff for the week, bought a newspaper, a couple of hard rolls to have with my lunch, and took one of their bags to use as the liner in my bathroom garbage pail.
There you go.
So I did give them their nickel. Yes, it gets recycled and so on. We are trying very hard. It is apparently, it's a bit of legislation that actually modified behavior, because use of disposable bags is down something on the order of 75% in this county.
Mm-hmm.
So we're helping to clean up the environment in our own little way.
There you go. Every little bit helps.
Yep.
I have some of the same hits, wallet, keys. The one thing that I always make sure to carry with me no matter where I go are my aviator headphones, because I cannot deal with going out in public and not having music going through my ears. I food shop with headphones. I browse Michael's when I'm looking for frames and artworks, art supplies, and just music everywhere I go. Luckily, I now have Spotify for the last couple of years and have curated my lists, and I have all my albums there and all my playlists and stuff like that, so that's great. Typically, if I know that I'm going to be going somewhere and I have to wait any amount of time whatsoever, I make a habit of bringing my iPad so that I can read some comics while I'm waiting to like get a haircut or something like that. And if we're going on a trip, way too many clothes. And I always pack game systems, whether it's the Nintendo Switch or I am not shy about bringing the PlayStation 4, just because Bronwyn and I love to game together whenever we get some downtime. So, yeah, not too many surprises there, but you asked, so there you go.
Yeah.
Can't believe you don't take a phone charger with you.
No, you know why? Because I lose them. I lose them all the time. I cannot.
Are they all in my handbag? Is that what it is? They're all in my handbag that you lost.
Probably. Friggin' Mary Poppins bag over there of all the crap you've got inside. No, I can't tell you how many phone cords I have upstairs in our bedroom that they're not the right cords to go to the stuff that I use anymore. And so it's just this tangled jungle of wires, and I really need to bring it to the electrical dump and just get rid of them because it's ridiculous. All right, let's see. Super quick, we'll hit this up, and then we got some comic related questions coming up. What are your favorite toppings? Is that the right word for it? Yes. Oh, it says for bread. I thought it was ice cream. I went with ice cream toppings. I can do bread super quick. I like a little bit of like brown honey mustard, but not too much. I'm a light on the spreads kind of guy. Huge fan of white bread with smooth peanut butter and jelly. Grape Concord jelly, if you've got it. Not stuff with seeds, no thank you. A little bit of mayo sometimes if you're making like a ham and smoked meat sandwich and stuff like that. And always processed. This is going to sound like a sin, but trust me, 2 slices of white bread, processed cheese, Kraft or whatever, and mayo on each side, throw it in the frying pan, that's your grilled cheese sandwich. I've said this on the podcast before, and I almost got lynched for it. Those same people then went and made the sandwich and have been converted. So I rest my case. And I got an ick when I mentioned the processed cheese.
Yes.
You have to understand.
Get real cheese. It's just as good. It's about the same price.
No. Don't start the cheese conversation. You do not have real cheese. What you think is real cheese is not real cheese. I'm sorry, North America. Your cheese is wrong.
Okay. You have to spend money. But here in Canada, we do have cheese. But also, in my defense about the processed cheese bit, you all know my history with Crohn's and stuff like that. Processed cheese was my only friend for more than 20 years. And so we have an understanding. But trust me, it melts the right way. It's so good. Just try it. All right.
Sarah, when you're here, right up the street from Androids Comics is an artisanal cheese shop with all sorts of lovely things, and they have lovely beer on tap and make nice little sandwiches of all sorts, and we'll go there.
Sarah squints from across the pond.
I did actually investigate the cheese on display when Bronwyn took us to a Canadian supermarket, and there were some actual cheeses. I will give you that much.
some, not all.
All right, super quick. Let's go through your favorite toppings for bread. Sarah, what weird Frankenstein thing have you created?
I don't create weird Frankenstein things. Frankly, I shouldn't eat bread. It does me no good. For very similar health reasons to you, Steve. I also shouldn't eat cheese. However, if you can get some freshly baked white crusty bread and you can get some Sussex Charmer and you can grate the Sussex Charmer onto the bread and just lightly melt it under the grill. Oh, I'm actually salivating. It's amazing. If it's more of like a cracker or like a crisp bread, then I would go for something like maybe a Cornish brie, perhaps, or some kind of like boursin type thing. I love cheese, frankly. That's where I'm going with this. Or if you're going to really shake it up, some nice rare roast beef and as much horseradish as your mouth can deal with. Yeah, but I'm not supposed to eat bread, so I probably shouldn't be talking about this.
No. Your doctor isn't listening. Don't worry.
How about you, Bob?
Doesn't stop me.
Here's the thing. On a loaf of Italian bread or a gyro, there's nothing for me to like some butter and garlic and toast it in the oven, put some oregano on that, maybe some basil. There's just that sort of thing. And then you dunk it into the sauce and whatever. I found a recipe from this bed and breakfast in Maine, something they called a cheesy, which I have in a pinch sometimes before a podcast. It is, you take a good hunk of dark or crusty bread, you make a mixture of a really good shredded cheese, whether it's a Romano or a Parmesan, like 2/3 of that, 1/3 mayo, maybe put some onions in it. You slather the bread lightly and put it under the broiler until it all gets bubbly and golden brown at the top. It's some good stuff.
Yeah, buddy. I'll go for that. Fantastic. All right. We'll mix it up a little bit. We have another kind of outside the realm of comics question, but we'll do a comics one real quick. Oh, not real quick. This is actually the big one. So yes. Here we go.
Maybe we should do the other one first.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah, we'll do that. Okay, so Wizard of Many Faults, formerly known as Beardman.
The
artist formerly known as Beardman. What's a country you've been to that you want to go back to? And what's a country you've never been to that you want to go to? So I have two super quick. Bronwyn and I went to Montego Bay, Jamaica for our honeymoon, and I absolutely positively had the best time of my life for that week when we were there. We stayed at a lovely, lovely hotel, all inclusive, and it was just incredible. Short of going to Margaritaville, which was not my bag, it was the vacation of a lifetime, and I loved it, and I would go back in a heartbeat. And I would also like to go back to London and meet up with Sarah, maybe go and visit Chichester and see where you haunt. And as far as like bucket list things of places that I would like to go, before I shuffle off this mortal coil to join the weeds, I want to see the Northern Lights, and I also want to swim in the Blue Lagoon. Those are our two bucket list things for me. And so that's my answer to that question. Bob, do you have anything?
Yeah, well, somewhere I'd like to go back to in terms of a foreign country is Jersey City. Definitely, definitely like to go back there. I've never been to another country, I have to say. So Jersey City's close enough. I've been there, stayed there, played basketball in a schoolyard over there. I could go see Joey. You know, we'll call New Jersey a foreign country in my realm of things. But a place to go to, I'm with you. I'd love to go to England. Maybe hit the continent, you know, take the channel then over to, but yeah, want to catch up with Sarah. We'll drag Hugh along. We'll find all our friends over there and we'll have a big to do.
Yeah. I got to see like some of the very, well, you would know better than I would, Sarah, as far as the area that I was staying in for the Kingsman trip that I went on that we met up. And it was very posh, very ritzy, lots of like high-end stores. And it was lovely. And it was, you know, it was right around, I think, getting into Christmas time. So it was very decorated and things like that. And I thought it was wonderful. I also want to see, like, the music scene of London. I would love to have gone to a show or to go back and rock out somewhere. I think what would be better suited for me. Got to see Buckingham Palace. And I was like, all right. And that was it. So I don't know a whole lot about that part of the world, sadly. And but I would love to go back. And I know that Bronwyn wants to go as well. So we might have to make some plans to go and meet up with Hugh and Sarah and do a little bit of a tour. Sarah, how about you?
Well, just to say quickly, the part of London that you were in was actually the City of London, which anybody who knows London will know the city, also known as the Square Mile. To anyone who doesn't know London, it's like, but London is a city. There is actually a specific part of London known as the City of London. It's the financial district, essentially, is where you were staying, which is why everything looked very expensive and had lots of buildings. But you did see St. Paul's Cathedral, and I did show you Tower Bridge over the river. So those are two little touristy boxes you can check off. For me, a place that I've never been, but I desperately want to go to is Iceland. It's incredibly expensive, which is why I've never gone there. But it's on my list of places that I'm hoping to get to next year. Places that I've been to and I want to go back to. I absolutely love Amsterdam. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, to get a long weekend there at the end of the year, because Amsterdam is just an absolutely amazing city, not just for all the obvious cliched reasons that people go there, but because it is beautiful and I love it. I absolutely adore Bruges. It's a fucking fairy tale city. If you've seen the movie In Bruges, that will make sense to you. Obviously, I love Canada and America, and I'm planning on going back to them lots and lots and lots, which you guys know because y'all are going to have to put up with me. I would also very much like to go back to Australia, but one very specific part of Australia. I went and stayed in a place called Noosa Heads, and it was just absolutely lovely. I adored it there. I stayed in the youth hostel because I was traveling with a backpack like you do. And it was such a lovely, friendly, welcoming place. And whilst I was in Noosa Heads, I arranged a trip to Fraser Island, which is as close as I have ever found to paradise on Earth. It was white sandy beaches and clear blue water and absolutely glorious. Don't go in the water. There are sharks, like actual tiger sharks. Nobody told me this until I started paddling and then got yelled at a lot. Yeah, turns out you don't go in the water on Fraser Island, but it was glorious. And I sat there on a beach and hung my hat up on a tree and wiggled my toes in the sand and read a book and just went, this is it. This is me done. I never want to leave.
I've arrived.
Yeah, I'm finished. Stick a fork in me. I'm done. But yeah, that's a lot of places I'd like to go to and a lot of places I've been I'd like to go back to. But if I could go to one place that I've never been to, it would for sure be Iceland, because it looks amazing and the Northern Lights look amazing. And I would very much like to meet Thor Bjornsson because he's a legend. So there we go. That was quite a long answer to quite a short question. Sorry.
Brilliant.
Nice. To follow up, ice cream, gummy bears, hot fudge, Reese's Pieces, and or cups. There you go. All right. Let's get to the comic book question, shall we?
Okay.
Matthew writes in, says, I have a thing for slightly obscure characters getting a book. The current Death's Head book by Teeny Howard is a lot of fun. What lesser known character or characters would you give a limited series to, and what creative team would handle it? Bob.
Okay, I've got a whole bunch. I'll do them as quickly as possible. First, I want a Jeff the Land Shark book by Kelly Thompson and Eric Anderson.
Yes.
gotta see one of those. Jeff, by the way, has returned a little bit. We see some, he's in the background of the last Power Pack, the last special they did. So Jeff is in Marvel 1000, so I think there's a renaissance, so it could happen. I'd like to see a miniseries about the Fantastic Four's mailman, Willie Lumpkin. And it could either be by Scotty Young or Whitley and the Gory Hero team. Could be
Oh, that
fun.
Would be fun.
Yeah. But now to more serious ones. I loved, I know I've talked about it on the show some while back, and then once again when they reprinted it, there was a book way back called Dakota North. And it's created by Martha Thomases and Toni Sammons. She's a private investigator / fashionista. It's a great little book. Ran 5 issues. It's even gotten dumped out of the Overstreet price guide because no one seems to care anymore. But I do. And I'd love the Nancy Drew team of Kelly Thompson, Jen St. Ange doing that one. There's the old character from the 40s who resurfaced. He was created by Stan Lee and Sid Shores back then. Louise Mason, the blonde phantom, who was part of Jennifer Walters' crew in the John Byrne She-Hulks, and wanted set in the 40s. So I think one of the DC Bombshells team, Marguerite Bennett and Mirka Andolfo, on a blonde phantom book. I love, and they have a day for her every April, Charlotte Gage Radcliffe, Misfit from the Birds of Prey. I want Gail Simone and Nicola Scott telling her story for 5 or 6 issues.
Oh, wow.
And then finally, because there's another one coming out, supposedly, but it's been canceled twice already, and artists have changed, and they've done some iffy jobs with it over the years, I want a miniseries of Tarpe Mills' Miss Fury, and done by Kelly Sue DeConnick and Joelle Jones.
Mm. I knew you were going to say that. I knew it. I said that in my head this morning. Waiting for that renaissance for Miss Fury.
Yeah, well, the last one that Dynamite announced, It's Billy Tucci was writing it and Emma Kubert was drawing it, and some of the art looked a bit off, a bit weird. Dynamite does all those extra covers, and some of them were horrible. That was due out for the last New York Comic Con, and it still hasn't come out. Initially, it was the last time it was solicited was for next week, the 25th, but I think that's gone the way of all flesh. So it's a public domain character that I think Dynamite right now is holding some cards about, but come on, give it to Kelly Sue.
So there's a chance.
You never know. You never know.
All right. Those all sound great, Bob. Nice job.
Oh, thank you.
Sarah, what do you got?
I can't follow that.
Sure you can. You'll do better.
I really won't, because I'm terrible at this, because I don't know slightly obscure characters on account of them being slightly obscure. I would very much like to have a Zatanna series. She pops up occasionally in other people's books. And we got like a little 3-parter with her in, I think, last year, maybe the year before. But if I could have some kind of Zatanna ongoing, I know that we want her to write all the things at the moment, but I'd love to see what Kelly Thompson could do with her.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd also love to see what Jeremy Whitley would do with her. I think that he has a really good grasp on teen female characters. And I would very much like to see what he would maybe do with that character. Yeah. Art-wise, I would love to see Jen St. Ange on any book ever, because I think she's great. Also, Sweeney Boo, who is sort of a kind of up-and-coming new artist. I think that she could do something amazing with Zatanna, so I'd very much enjoy that. Other than that, I don't know the obscure characters on account of them being obscure. I don't read that many old comics, or I don't read hardly any X-Men comics, so they tend to have all the obscure characters in. So I'm not really much use at this question. I'm really sorry, Matt, because this is an awesome question and I feel like I'm not doing it justice, but I don't want to sort of come out with some kind of throwaway answer that is complete claptrap that I've made up. So yeah, I'm going to stick with Zatanna and Kelly Thompson or Jeremy Whitley and Jen St. Ange or Sweeney Boo. Also, if you're not following Jen St. Ange and Sweeney Boo on social media, particularly Instagram, you should, because they are both absolutely amazing artists and I would like to see them on all the things in future, please, nicely.
Yes. That's a great answer. Isn't Sweetie Boo doing the, was she doing the Marvel team up? Or was it the Marvel Rising?
She did the Captain Marvel.
She did the Captain Marvel.
Yeah, the action, right. The Marvel action from IDW, yes.
Yes. I love her style. I absolutely love it. So, yeah, she, I would say she's definitely going to be one to watch in the future.
Mm-hmm. I met her at Fan Expo a few weeks ago.
Was she lovely? Because she seems like she'd
be absolutely. Yeah, I bought my Viv Vision print from her. Yeah, I'm going to go get a frame for it today and hang it up in my office.
And then you can send me a picture of it.
Yeah, it's. I'm going to put it right beneath my Jeanne St. Ange Nancy Drew.
Oh.
Yep, it's good stuff.
You're just teasing me now.
I have a well-curated office upstairs. I'll take some pictures for you. You've seen it, though. You've seen at least a portion of it.
I've seen it, yeah. I didn't know you had Sweetie Boo, though.
Yeah, no, she was great. Yeah, that whole, like, four creators in a row, the way that they had arranged that artist alley was incredible. That's where I spent all my money. with the exception of Marguerite Bennett, who was on the other end. Just absolutely everybody was lovely that day. Okay. And you did a fine job with the question. You know, this one's tough because not only have we covered this one a couple of times throughout the years, but sometimes these characters, they don't feel obscure to you, the reader, because you have such an affinity for them. Right? So it kind of blurs the line a little bit. Anyway, so I came up with three answers, and I found creators for these characters, but I also wrote some mini treatments for the stories that I would like to see. So I know that some creators say not to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway because it's fun. All right. So I would love a story about Nature Girl. From Marvel and the X-Men, taking on Dario Agger and Roxxon. So picture this. Roxxon moves into a relatively unknown safe haven for BAMFs. If you know anything about Nature Girl, you know that she has kind of a kindred relationship with the BAMFs and with Krakoa. So they move into the BAMF territory and begin mining it for a mysterious material that, when harvested, allows for goods and services to be teleported from one Roxxon-owned site to the other, effectively changing Agger's need to pay for shipping. He's all about world domination and money and his corporate stuff, and so I figured that would be a really good angle for him. It just needs to be like maybe a three-issue mini. Kind of this rollicking adventure of Nature Girl kind of like Princess Mononoke-ing it and just like going ham on Roxxon. I think it would be fun. And I would love to see Catherine Immonen tackle this with Stephanie Hans on art.
Ooh.
I absolutely love Stephanie Hans, particularly when she does foliage and animals and things of that nature. And I think that she would make for one hell of an artist on that title. Another one I have is an Elsa Bloodstone book. Kelly Thompson has been doing amazing stuff with Elsa in her Jessica Jones miniseries that she's been releasing. So I would like Kelly Thompson and Tyler Crook to join forces for an Elsa Bloodstone story. And here is my story. All across the 616, reports of children having gone missing from their beds in the middle of the night have risen to the surface at an alarming rate. When questioned, there lies one commonality among all the parents. Each child had been complaining about there being strange noises and lights coming from beneath their bed earlier that evening. Elsa Bloodstone knows what happened, and she's got an arsenal of monster-killing materials that will aid her in traveling to Slumberland, where all the worst of the boogeymen slither within the shadows. Early in the story, Elsa finds Theodora, a brave and imaginative young girl who escaped the monster's clutches during transport. Together, Elsa and Theodora share a common goal: find Theodora's kid sister Maggie and rescue the rest of the missing children before it's too late. That could also be a limited series. Doesn't have to be.
Nice.
Thank you. And I've got what I've saved my favorite for last and the biggest plot. So tuck into this. I want a Daughters of Thunder book starring Frigg, Elisiv, and Atli. I spoke about them a little bit earlier in the show. They are Thor's granddaughters. Thank you very much, Bob.
Problem.
Okay, here we go. One day, While walking among the halls of all-knowing, Elisiv notices that the lock to a centuries-old vault has been broken. Inside the fortified room sits a blank space where the Book of Umbra used to be, an ancient tome written by Mother Magpie, a wicked witch lost to time who one day stood as the most vile sorceress in all the realms. The book contains all of her worst spells, and now all that's left in the chamber is a single frayed shadow black feather. Mother Magpie is alive. She has her diary, and it's up to the Daughters of Thunder to retrieve it. Lost on the idea of where their search should begin, Jane Foster brings word of all color having left the Rainbow Bridge, leaving it a monochrome archway to Asgard, which has already begun to corrode with shadows and death. As Mother Magpie's virus spreads, all color begins disappearing from across the Ten Realms, leaving nothing but gray and sadness. The Daughters, along with Jane Foster's Valkyrie, give chase to Mother Magpie, who sits atop a glittering throne made of every color ever imagined in her newfound kingdom of complexions. So that would be written by Kelly Sue DeConnick with art by Sarah Pacelli.
Damn!
Yeah.
Take my money.
I think that would be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Matthew.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And seriously, everybody, podcast at talkingcomicbooks.com is the email if you want to send us some longer form stuff or maybe a couple of rapid fire questions. We have access to that now. I know that's ridiculous, but hey, that's how it goes. So, all right, let's quickly talk about the books that we are looking forward to on the shelves this new comic book day. Sarah, what are you picking up?
I am picking up, she said, reaching back for her book. Oh, let's have a look. Aquaman, number 52. Black Hammer, Age of Doom, number 12. Middle West, number 11. Sabrina Super Magazine, that I vaguely mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Steeple, number 1. But yeah, the book that I am the most looking forward to, and you know that I'm going to be talking about this, even though I've talked about issue 1 at length, Once and Future, number 2. Yeah.
Excited, are we?
A little bit.
Is that all you got?
Yep.
That was a pretty good list, yeah.
It's a light week this week.
Mm-hmm. Bob, what do you got?
Definitely want to check out Steeple number 1. We have the Crisis on Infinite Betty's number 4. Jimmy Olsen number 3. We've got another
bat. Is that this week?
Yes, I do believe so. Aquaman 52... Jane Foster, Valkyrie, number 3. The previously mentioned Marvel Action, Captain Marvel, where we see what happens with an invasion of Flurkins.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time in 2 years, Adam Warren has an Empowered volume coming out.
Oh, wow. What's this one called?
It's just number 11.
Oh.
I have no idea. I know he does post some of those things online. I haven't seen it in a long time. I'm willing to take a shot.
Okay. I am also picking up Once in Future number 2, along with Steeple number 1, Aquaman number 52. I might give Jimmy Olsen 3 another shot. Back and forth on that one a little bit, but mostly enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Batman number 79, making our way to the end. Middle West number 11, The Weatherman volume 2 number 4. I talked about Weatherman and how amazing that second arc has been last week. Absolute Carnage number 3 drops this week. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 12. House of X number 5, need to do some major catching up with that stuff. And of course Valkyrie, Jane Foster number 3. Lots of the same books as other people. It happens. The hype.
Could make for an interesting discussion. Would I think open discussion next week might end up being Steeple?
I would say sure.
There's a chance of that.
There's definitely a chance of that. We'll put that to the group and see what shakes out.
Oh, I've just remembered there is a new book coming out as well that I want to check out. And I've just remembered it because I used it as part of my title of my new releases blog post. There's a book coming out called You Are Obsolete. Which is about a group of scientists who go to an island where weird things have been happening. And basically it turns out that like the children have been engineering the deaths of anyone over the age of 40. And I was just like, oh, that sounds very kind of 1970s sci-fi style creepy. Mm-hmm. So I will also be checking out You Are Obsolete, if only because I like using the title. I walked into the shop and the owner pointed at me and went, "You're obsolete." And I was like, that's kind of offensive, but I'll take it. Yeah. So there you go. That's another book that I'd completely forgotten about, but that is coming out.
That sounds like fun.
It does sound like fun.
I'm still waiting for Bad Reception number 2. Did you ever read that first issue?
Yes.
Wasn't it awesome?
Oh, I loved it so much.
Oh, okay, good. I'm not alone on that. I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, it was really, really good. That should be coming out fairly soon, actually. That was a few weeks ago that came out, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Long one, too. That was a beefy book.
Yes, and a lot happened in there. Mm-hmm. Bad Reception number 2 is due out September 25th. So not this new comic book day, next week.
Okay, awesome.
There you go.
Looking forward to that for sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to some closing statements. Do you want to pimp the new episode of Ladies one more time?
Yes, I will mention the fact that the latest episode of Ladies of Valhalla is now available where all good podcasts can be found. We went pretty long on this one. We're talking about The Unstoppable Wasp, and Jeremy Whitley was kind enough to come and join us. And when I say we went quite long, the podcast is over 2.5 hours.
Whoa. Length.
So if you like to listen to it on your commute to work or your daily walk, we have got you covered. We go into some pretty deep subjects. And somehow we also talk about the Earth being flat, and climate change and some other decidedly random things like that. But as always, it was a good time recording it, and we hope everybody enjoys listening to it. So please do check it out.
Sweet.
You will.
Bob, do you have anything?
Nope.
All right. How about that? All right, we've reached the end of this week's edition of the Talking Comics podcast. As always, you can send us your comments or your questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We are also on Twitter @TalkingComics. Don't forget to check out TalkingComicBooks.com for reviews from our fantastic contributors. And please go and listen to Talking Valiant, D&D Adventure, and of course, the Ladies of Valhalla podcasts. Bob, where can our listeners find you?
Old-fashioned email, bobreyer@talkingcomicbooks.com.
Sarah?
You can find me anywhere that media is social, @geekcountrylady.
Oh, yeah. You can find Joey @joeybracino on the Twitter and Instagram. I am @dead_anchoress on the things. Jessica is @jarsica. And yeah, so for Bob.
Well, again, happy birthday, Sarah, Hugh, and our old co-host, Stephanie.
And for Sarah.
Thank you for all my birthday wishes, everyone.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Sarah. Happy birthday, Hugh. Happy unbirthday to everybody else if it's not your birthday. We love you. Thank you for listening. Send us your emails. Send us your questions. Be excellent to each other. And until next time on the Talking Comics podcast, to be continued.
Hello.
There she is.
I couldn't work out why I couldn't hear anyone, and it's because I didn't have my headphones in.
Oh, God. How's it going over there? How's your birthday?
Apparently it's going well.
Awesome.
I'm sitting there going, I press the answer button. I can't hear anything. Oh, yeah, your headphones aren't in.